The men are still being, I believe, mostly men. The women are in the army, but they're being trained, and it's a long process. And that soon will come another muddy, horrific winter made worse by Russia's bombing of the grid. And Russia should not be let off. I mean, there has to be some measure of, even, I wouldn't use the word, but reparations in rebuilding Ukraine. But again, the war weariness is deep in both countries, though Russia is better equipped to handle a long war. People are not. Many people are so war weary.
So, are you saying you think that Putin thinks he might work better with Katrina, he might work better with Kamala Harris than with Donald Trump?
I do. I think Russia does not like unhinged, unstable, undisciplined. Mr. Trump has brought in people like John Bolton, who are eternal cold warriors. There's a new generation. I'm not sure Putin's part of it, but there is a new generation that for many, the Cold War is ancient history. And there needs to be a dialogue. And in fact, the
We have
Defense
5 seconds.
Secretary. So there needs to be an ongoing dialogue for security reasons, nuclear reasons. So this could be setting a pathway. For 2 years, there was dialogue. You're not going to just cut it off at the pass.
Katrina
Thank you.
Vandenhoevel, Russia expert and publisher of The Nation magazine. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KABU. Consider adding KABU to your will or add KABU as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KABU along with your family and friends in your legacy giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KABU to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your considerate future gift. Contact us at 503-231-8032 or email development@kabu.fm to notify us of your plan.
This is KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on the KABU Evening News, Multnomah County and its ambulance service provider reach an agreement to fix short staffing.
A majority of TriMet board members didn't ride public transportation last year.
And Portland police say they're preparing for a street racing event this weekend.
Good evening. This is KABU Evening News for Friday, August 2nd, 2024. I'm Danny Shy.
And I'm Althea Billings. There's a new model for ambulances in Multnomah County, according to an agreement that was made public on Thursday. It's an important change since ambulances in the county have been understaffed and stretched thin since the pandemic. There's also been a shortage of paramedics nationwide. Multnomah County requires that its ambulances have two paramedics, which is relatively unusual. In many other places, ambulances will be staffed by a paramedic and an EMT who have less intensive training. The new tentative agreement between the county and American Medical Response, or AMR, the ambulance service provider, has three tiers for staffing these ambulances. The first is a basic life support ambulance staffed by two EMTs. Then there are the advanced life support ambulances with two paramedics. The third tier is a hybrid advanced life support ambulance with one paramedic and one EMT. Multnomah County has given AMR over $7 million in fines for its slow service times. If this new year-long agreement works out, AMR could waive those fines. The agreement will need to be voted on by the whole county board sometime soon before it can go into effect. In January of this year, there were 2,900 instances where someone called for an ambulance and one wasn't available, and the wait time was more than 28 minutes. County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson helped to negotiate the agreement over the last 4 months. She said, quote, "This agreement improves ambulance response times and holds AMR accountable for more ambulances to respond to 911 calls on time. When someone needs an ambulance, every second counts," end quote.
Only two of the six TriMet board directors used their TriMet ID cards last year. That's according to public ridership records obtained by the Portland Mercury. The TriMet Board of Directors is responsible for making key decisions for Portland's public transit agency, including setting policies, enacting legislation, and reviewing contracts. However, recently uncovered public records show that board members Robert Kellogg, Thomas Kim, Laverne Lewis, and Kath Way didn't use their public transit passes a single time from June 30th, 2023 to July 1st, 2024. Ozzie Gonzalez served as the board's president during that time and only used his pass 7 times. Gonzalez has since moved out of the district he was appointed to represent and resigned from the board last month. Bradley Bundy is a Portland public transit advocate and helped to uncover the ridership records. He made the records request after seeing similar data about the board in charge of Atlanta's public transit system. Bundy also obtained data from TriMet's 12 executive directors, most of whom were frequent riders last year. Bondi says he was disappointed by how infrequently the board members rode public transit. He told the Portland Mercury, quote, "It is shameful and inexcusable that the people entrusted with being stewards of such a large and important public institution can't be bothered to themselves use the service. It's indicative of their lack of interest in or care for transit system," end quote. In a statement from TriMet, they highlighted the fact that the data only included riders where board member tapped their TriMet ID badge on the HOP electronic fare reader, that the data did not include rides purchased with other payment methods. However, public records show TriMet's 2 other board members used their passes frequently.
New research suggests humans aren't the only ones experiencing negative effects from wildfire smoke. Researchers are studying ponderosa pines, which inhabit much of the western United States, and they're finding that smoke may be affecting trees and many more kinds of plants, including food crops. Research co-author Delphine Farmer is a chemistry professor at Colorado State University. She says they don't yet know the full extent of the effects of wildfire smoke on plant life, but they do know it can impact the economy in some surprising ways.
Oregon has some amazing wine, and the wine that's grown there, there are a lot of concerns about smoke taint, and that's when the gases and particles and smoke actually get into the grapes and impact the taste and flavor of the wine.
She says they've found smoke can cause plants to close their pores and even pause photosynthesis. This may mean shorter and slower growing periods with unpredictable consequences for crop growth and output. Farmer adds the best solution is to work to manage the effects of climate change. While forest fires have been a part of a healthy forest life cycle for centuries, the rate and intensity of recent fires has ramped up. As Oregon faces yearly major wildfire seasons, Farmer says it's important to find ways to mitigate the smoke exposure.
As we move to stronger effects of climate change and global change induced by human activity, we know we are going to be seeing more of these wildfire events. And so the best way to reduce smoke exposure, whether it's to humans or to plants, is really to reduce the number of wildfire events.
She adds human behavior led to this increase in wildfire smoke and emphasizes the smoke will, in turn, affect human behavior. She recommends people advocate for better firefighting techniques for at-risk areas and promote better climate policies.
Portland police say they're preparing for a large-scale street takeover this weekend. The illegal event, which bills itself as an annual competition called the West Court Invitational, drew participants across Oregon, Washington, California, and Idaho to Portland last summer. The event may have involved as many as 1,000 drivers and spectators last year. At a news conference, the police bureau said they plan to pool their resources and deploy extra patrol cars throughout the weekend to respond. They declined to discuss specific tactics or information about where the takeover could be held, but it was noted that streets like Marine Drive, 122nd Avenue, and Airport Way have historically been popular takeover locations because they offer wide open stretches of road. Takeover events such as this often cause traffic backups, and some have led to injuries and fatalities from either the cars themselves or guns brought to the events. Last year in Portland, there were 2 shootings, 1 homicide, and 1 fatal car crash associated with the street takeovers. Last year, Oregon passed legislation in an effort to crack down on street racing by increasing penalties for reckless driving and organizing takeovers. PPB Chief Bob Day explained the dangers of takeovers and illegal street races. He said, quote, "There is a degree of violence associated with these events, in addition to just really poor driving behavior. If you stumble across an event, go the other way," end quote.
Oregon may soon have a new state-designated scenic bikeway winding through forests in southeast Lane County. The 60-mile After Heidi Drive is a scenic byway which runs between McKenzie River and the town of Oak Ridge and goes past Terwilliger Hot Springs and the Cougar Reservoir. If this proposal is approved, signs along the scenic byway will be installed and maintained, but no major structural changes will be made to the road. The Scenic Bikeways program was established in 2009 by Oregon Parks and Recreation, which promotes cycling routes that offer cyclists a unique and enjoyable experience. There are currently 17 designated routes across the state. The routes are designed to showcase the state's natural beauty, frequently winding past historical landmarks and scenic views. They also attract visitors, support local businesses, and encourage exploration by bike. Oregon is the only state with such a program, though California and Washington could soon follow suit. The program nominated After Heidi Drive for its spectacular views of mountains, lakes, waterfalls, creeks, and more. The decision must be approved by the Oregon Parks and Recreation Commission in their upcoming September meeting.
VP Kamala Harris and Ohio Senator J.D. Vance respond to former President Donald Trump's comments on her race. Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gersovich is freed from Russian prison, and U.S. Senate takes on a bill to regulate AI. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
And it was the same old show, the divisiveness and the disrespect. And let me just say, the American people deserve better.
Speaking to a black sorority in Houston, Vice President Kamala Harris responded to former President Donald Trump's comments about her race. Trump said falsely that Harris became black only recently after emphasizing her Indian heritage. Harris joined a separate black sorority when attending Howard University, one of the nation's most prominent historically black colleges. Many condemn Trump's remarks as weird and repulsive, but some see the Trump campaign trying to define Harris just as voters are starting to focus on her. Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance doubled down at an Arizona campaign event.
Kamala Harris is a phony who caters to whatever audience is in front of her.
Harris replacing President Joe Biden as the presumptive Democratic nominee may solidify some black votes. Before Biden stepped aside, a Pew Research poll found black voters had deep doubts about both major party candidates. As part of a huge prisoner exchange, Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich has been freed after being held on espionage charges in Russia since March. Former U.S. Marine Paul Whelan and dissidents like Vladimir Kara-Murza were also released. President Joe Biden says it took close work with allies.
The deal that made this possible was a feat of diplomacy and friendship. Multiple countries helped get this done. They joined a difficult, complex negotiations at my request, and I personally thank them all again.
A bipartisan group of senators has introduced a bill to ban the use of AI-generated deepfakes of federal candidates. Democratic Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar says the No Fakes Act would let people sue those producing, hosting, or sharing the digital deceptions.
This is a hair on fire moment. AI has the potential to turbocharge the spread of disinformation and deceive voters.
Recent surveys show nearly two-thirds of Americans are confident the upcoming election will be fair and accurate, but Maine Secretary of State Shayna Bello says if people have doubts, they should get involved.
People who are anxious about election security, this is a good conversation to have with their local municipal clerk, because the clerks are working very hard in partnership with us and law enforcement to ensure that security.
A Forbes magazine survey ties international student enrollment to American elections. It finds nearly half of foreign students say they would be more likely to pick the U.S. as a college under a Democratic administration, citing a more welcoming atmosphere. But Caitlin Anderson, founder of a graduate admissions consulting firm, says others tell them a Republican administration would make them more optimistic.
30% of people that said they would be more likely to consider studying the U.S. under a Trump presidency said that the reason was because it's inspiring us, because there'll be more jobs, there'll be more opportunities, and he'll be less focused on intervening in international affairs.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Thank you. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. I'm Sabine Mercer. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali, and at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a low of 67 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 86. Today in history, in 1870, the Tower Subway opens in London. It's the world's first underground tube railway. The quote of the day is from American novelist and critic James Baldwin, born this day in 1924. He said, "All art is as a kind of confession, more or less oblique. All artists, if they are to survive, are forced at last to tell the whole story, to vomit the anguish up."
There's a new executive order from the president of the Navajo Nation requiring an agreement in order for people to transportate radioactive material through the Navajo Nation. With that story and more, it's Antonio Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin issued an executive order Wednesday requiring an agreement to be in place prior to the transportation of radioactive material through the Navajo Nation. The order comes after the tribe says two trucks with uranium ore traveled through the Navajo Nation Tuesday. Tribal police attempted to halt the transportation, but the trucks made it from Arizona to Utah. According to the tribe, the owner of a mine near the Grand Canyon did not provide notice to Navajo officials. The tribe says there are Navajo laws in place regarding the transportation of radioactive materials to ensure public safety. Nigrin calls the transportation illegal and says failure to seek approval disregards tribal sovereignty. The order will be in effect for 6 months. There's a new program helping Indigenous people enter the medical field. The Mountain West News Bureau's Hannah Merzbach reports it's a way to funnel tribal members into careers and fill healthcare gaps.
The online 3 to 6 month trainings are stepping stones into the healthcare world. Carla Coleman is with Health Tech Academy, a for-profit company that helps fill staffing shortages. Now it's partnering with the Jackson, Wyoming-based nonprofit Native American Jumpstart to find Indigenous students across the Cowboy State, Great Plains, and the Navajo Nation. Enrolled tribal members can apply for grants that could make the entire program free.
We're not only able to help people start in this industry, but we can also help them build their own community by staying in their community.
Compared to other U.S. populations, Indigenous peoples see higher mortality rates and more chronic conditions, partly due to being far away from quality care. Coleman says she hopes this partnership could help bridge that gap. I'm Hannah Merzbach.
A Native American man who was one of three iron workers who died in a construction accident 25 years ago this summer was recently remembered at a public ceremony. Chuck Kornbach of Station WUWM reports.
William DeGrave, Jeffrey Wisher, and Jerome Starr died in July 1999 when the so-called man basket they were in crashed to the ground. That was after a crane was unable to control a 450-ton piece of metal roofing being lifted in a strong wind. The construction project was a new Major League Baseball stadium, now called American Family Field, where the Milwaukee Brewers play. Jerome Starr was Ojibwe. Part of a recent ironworkers-sponsored remembrance ceremony outside the ballpark included tribal member Maynard Webster performing an honor song. Later, Starr's sister, Catherine Hamilton Starr, choked up while talking to a reporter about her relative.
He was a great brother. He was always providing for everybody, always cared about everybody. He was very caring. He was always there in need of anything, you know. We were very close.
Standing next to Catherine was her daughter, Jerome Starr's niece, Dawn Hamilton, who tearfully relayed a favorite memory.
Oh, my gosh.
Pick one.
Oh, God. Going over to Uncle Jerry's house in the summertime to go swimming.
Yeah.
And then the holidays or whatever, he always opened up his home or whatever. Everybody in the family, everybody and anybody was welcome. He kept us united.
Hamilton and others also took part in a smudging ceremony to pray for the deceased. Hamilton says she's grateful all of those who passed away building a ballpark were honored. I'm Chuck Quirnbach.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Nationwide, the rate of deaths due to drug misuse decreased by 6% in 2022, according to a report from Trust for America's Health. The report shows in 2022, alcohol, suicide, and drug overdoses declined for the first time in 5 years. As Roz Brown reports, the study shows New Mexico is doing better than the country as a whole.
Most recent data from the group Trust for America's Health shows overdoses and suicides remain at historic levels, despite a small decrease in 2022. But the findings for New Mexico are more encouraging than many other states. Over the past two decades, Brandon Revis with the Trust says deaths from alcohol, drugs, and suicide in the U.S. increased by 142%, from 74,000 in 2002 to almost 208,000 deaths in 2022.
The report shows that in terms of combined deaths from alcohol, suicide, and drug overdose, New Mexico is actually doing better than the national average. There was a 7% decline in the state compared to a 1% decline across the country.
In contrast, he says New Mexico has seen an increase in deaths from both fentanyl misuse and unintentional cocaine overdoses. While the combined rate of alcohol, drug, and suicide deaths in 2022 was slightly lower for the first time in 5 years, it is still more than double what it was 20 years ago. If you or someone you know is in crisis, call or text the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. New Mexico has had suicide prevention success using harm reduction techniques, but Revis says the state needs more oversight of insurance providers and sustainable funding for the 988 Lifeline. He notes the new data comes at a time when many groups are reporting more mental health issues, especially among kids.
New Mexico was near the bottom of the state rankings in terms of school mental health services. So surging resources and training for those types of services, I think, is really critical to achieving the kind of generational and foundational changes that we need here.
Suicide is often not preceded by warnings. New Mexico authorities believe there have been 3 suicides at the Rio Grande Gorge Bridge near Taos this year. Some community leaders say more bridge safety features are needed, but there are crisis hotline phones at the bridge, as well as an intervention security unit. This is Roz Brown, New Mexico.
Homicides and other violent crimes have dropped to pre-pandemic levels nationally, according to a mid-year report from the Council on Criminal Justice. Researchers say this data is encouraging but lacks local context. The violence prevention advocates say murder rates, particularly from guns, remain too high. Will Walkley has more in Virginia.
Crime rates in major U.S. cities are continuing to fall from the heights they reached during the COVID-19 pandemic. That's according to a new report from the Council on Criminal Justice. In Virginia, homicides in Richmond, Norfolk, and Virginia Beach have declined this year compared to the first half of 2023, but advocates say there's still a lot of work to do to control crime, especially gun deaths. Charles Crest is with the group Stop the Violence 757.
One is too many for me. So what they're saying in the numbers, yes, we don't have 10 anymore, but we still have an astronomical number that it's almost week to week. We're losing someone between the ages of 30 to 15.
Nationally, the murder rate rose 30% between 2019 and 2020, the largest single-year increase in more than a century. It's taken until this year for homicides to drop below pandemic levels. The data comes from about 30 cities of various sizes, and it also showed drops in robberies, aggravated assault, and domestic violence cases. Ernesto Lopez with the Council on Criminal Justice says the results are encouraging, but limited considering the variation city to city and lack of communities providing accurate numbers.
Homicide is influenced by a lot of local factors. In fact, we know that most violence can be isolated to specific neighborhoods within a city, so that it's essential for leaders to take time to analyze and fully understand local crime patterns while having a view towards more national trends.
Motor vehicle theft has risen recently in Richmond, but dropped in Norfolk and Virginia Beach. In Washington, D.C., homicides dropped in the past year, but remain above 2019 levels. I'm Will Walkie.
A new report examines the growing hype around the use of hydrogen gas as an energy source, from significant infrastructure challenges to costs. It suggests hydrogen plant proposals pose financial risks and could delay investment in more sustainable energy alternatives like wind and solar. Shantia Hudson has more in North Carolina.
A new report questions the feasibility of power plants transitioning to hydrogen gas to run their turbines. Despite claims that hydrogen is a clean energy solution for reducing carbon emissions in North Carolina, the research details significant challenges and uncertainties. Report author Dennis Wamstead is with the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis. He says they found that hydrogen isn't a readily available option because there isn't much infrastructure in terms of pipelines or storage, as well as the lack of supply.
So you have these three different parts of the infrastructure that would take an incredible amount of time to build and would cost an incredible amount of money to construct.
He says energy companies would have to continue to use methane gas until they could make the transition. In North Carolina, Duke Energy is among the companies proposing a hydrogen-capable gas plant in Pearson County. The proposal has faced pushback from environmental groups who say the move could expose customers to large financial risk and fossil fuel pollution. Wamstead says hydrogen use also has environmental concerns because of the marginal benefits it provides in cutting emissions.
So if you were to substitute hydrogen into a gas turbine, and you say you started out at 5% of hydrogen and 95% traditional methane gas, you essentially get no environmental benefit from that because you get very little CO2 reduction.
He also warns that hydrogen-related power projects not only come with a high price tag, but may also burden ratepayers without a guarantee of success. He says this could get in the way of cheaper and more prevalent renewable energy alternatives like wind, solar, and battery storage.
We have the alternatives now that we know the cost of and that are available that we can use in the next 5 years or 10 years to build out as much green energy, renewable energy, as we possibly can.
The report calls on utilities to be more transparent with their data and ask state regulators to consider the true impact hydrogen would have long term. For North Carolina News Service, I'm Shantia Hudson.
Advances in oil and gas drilling technology could boost thermal energy. Geothermal energy, the same tech used in oil and gas shale boom, could help reduce the cost of drilling for clean, renewable geothermal. Dr. Anthony Lizowith has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowith, and this is Climate Connections. Below the surface of the Earth, deep reservoirs of steam and hot water provide a vast potential source of geothermal energy. This energy is used to generate electricity at some power plants in western states. But in most parts of the U.S., accessing geothermal requires deep drilling. That's long been a barrier to developing this renewable resource, technologically and financially.
But that has changed significantly in the past 10, 15 years, and that is related to the fact that we had a massive technology flourish in the oil and gas shale boom. So there were massive advancements in drilling technologies.
Jamie Beard is the founder of Project Interspace, a nonprofit working to grow the geothermal industry.
These technologies that were developed over the last 10 or 15 years, when transferred into geothermal, can massively reduce cost, also speed up the process of drilling, and allow us to drill places that we weren't able to drill before. That is an asset that we need to be leveraging.
So her group is working to bring renewable energy advocates and funders together with fossil fuel companies. She says bridging the gap between these often polarized groups could spur the rapid development of this clean and renewable energy source. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
It's a pivotal time for Major League Baseball, and Olympic accomplishments in Paris are pouring in. For more, we go to Grant Button with KBOO Sports News.
This Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific time was the MLB trade deadline. Although no earth-shattering trades were dealt, teams such as the Cardinals, Dodgers, and Mariners were able to vastly improve their rosters through targeting players who fit positions of need. The Cardinals picked up right-handed starting pitcher Eric Feed and veteran outfielder Tommy Pham from the tanking White Sox and added Sean Alexander to their bullpen, all without giving up many of their top players or prospects. The Dodgers, who always believe they are World Series contenders, acquired starting pitcher Jack Flaherty from the Tigers, Kevin Kiermaier from the Blue Jays, and the speedy but injured Tommy Edman from the Cardinals. And the Mariners, famous for hitting, picked up Justin Turner and Randy Arozarena, both solid hitters that can add something, anything, as the Mariners wait for an injured J.P. Crawford and Julio Rodriguez to return to the lineup. Above a 200 batting average will do just fine. Moving to the Olympics, Katie Ledecky took home the silver medal in the 4x200m freestyle relay, giving her the most medals ever by a female swimmer. Staying in the water, the U.S. rowing team won gold for the first time since 1960, beating out New Zealand by under a second. Justin Best, a member of the team, described the feeling he got after they won. He said, quote, "Crossing that finish line, I was just bawling my eyes out. Seeing the flag being raised, I love these guys. I love the United States of America, and I wouldn't want to do it with another group," end quote. Moving high into the air, Simone Biles not only took home gold with her U.S. team, but also individually as well. She became the oldest all-around champion since 1952 and solidified herself as the greatest U.S. gymnast ever. Medal talks. For KBOO Sports News, I'm Grant Button.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 2nd, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Grant Button. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Mason Kennedy, Roz Braun, Antonia Gonzalez, Shantaya Hudson, Will Walkie, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO.